You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jessica Toku Ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rāpare Thursday. My name is Jessica, and I'll be your host for the next hour. I'm also joined in the studio by producers Beth and Castor. Ewhai ake nei coming up on the show. Beth, what have you got for us today?
I speak to Councillor for Manukau, Lotu Fuli, about the Auckland climate budget and the review of the first proposal for Auckland Council's 10-year budget. I also speak to Professor of Social and Community Health at the University of Auckland, Peter Adams, about the influence of the tobacco industry on Aotearoa.
Kester, what have you got for us today?
I speak to Oxfam's climate justice lead, Nick Henry, about a report he authored on New Zealand's fossil fuel industry.
He aha o whakaaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So get in touch, tuku pātuhi mai. Text in on 5395 or wire mai rane. Give us a call in studio on 309 3879. Ka oe I wari wari e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kororo anō he paki hiri roki roki mā runga I te pai tuku tuku o Erirangi Pōho. Mi haere ki 95BFM Erekati.com and you can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com, under BCasts.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
As part of the Auckland Climate Grant, Auckland Council is allocating $225,000 to community-run climate action groups. The funding round is set to open in March 2024. The Council is also reviewing its 10-year budget proposal. A consultation will take place in February 2024, in which the public can make submissions about the topics that matter to them. I spoke to Councillor for Manukau, Lotu Fuli, about the Auckland Climate Grant and the review of the first proposal for the Council's 10-year budget, and began by asking her what the Council hopes to achieve with the Climate Grant.
So the Auckland Climate Grant is to provide grants to empower communities and organisations, basically to build resilience for climate action. So, we are trying as a city to get our emissions down. We know that we are in the middle of a climate crisis, and we've seen recently weather events that prove that. So the grant is about providing money so that we can build resilience within our city and within our community.
What are some of the climate action groups that the council will be funding, and how did the council choose which ones to fund?
So the $225,000 fund is specifically for community groups, and the funding round actually opens next year in March 2024, and we're inviting community groups to apply for the grant. And we want to empower community groups to lead some of that change in our communities. We saw, like during the weather events recently, that it was our communities that responded. But we've also realised, I think, over time that in order for behaviour to change and in order for resilience to actually happen, you have to do it from within our own communities. Council officers can do a certain amount, but in order to really reach our communities, it has to be community-led. So I think this is a fund that will hopefully empower communities and organisations to do that. And from my personal experience, having been on the local boards, I know that there are community groups out there that do a really good job of reaching our more vulnerable communities, of reaching our Māori and Pacific communities, and of reaching young people. And they do a better job than us as a council sort of organisation doing that.
Is this annual funding, or is this something new, the Auckland Climate Grant?
I think the grant was first established in 2021, and it was part of the 10-year program that started back then. And so I think annually the Planning, Environment and Parks Committee has to vote on it and has to approve it. So this amount, $225,000, has been approved for next year. And I guess every year, because we are, you know, we are in a sort of fiscally constrained environment, every year we have to consider our budgets. And we're going through a long-term plan process now. And at the end of that, we'll have a clearer idea of what the budgets will be for us going forward and for climate action initiatives like this. So yeah, every year we have to look at our budget, and every year that committee will consider how much they're going to put out for grants like this.
What are some of the key points currently being reviewed in Auckland Council's 10-year budget?
Oh yes, so the 10-year budget yesterday just went out for consultation. So currently we've got the Mayor's proposal for what we'll do over the next 10 years. It includes funding for our major CCOs, so for Transport, Auckland Transport and Eke Panuku and Tataki Auckland Unlimited. It also includes how we will fund our local boards, and there's a proposal in there for a more equitable way to fund local boards. But it also includes other things like operational grants, you know, how the Mayor wants us to continue to save money. And that will be something that we've been trying to do that over time with council, but I think there will be some challenges going forward for the organisation to see how we can save money. But I'm also glad that our staff have put together some options for Aucklanders to give us feedback on. So Aucklanders can choose to pay less, but you'll get less. So they call that a pay less, get less option. But if Aucklanders want us to spend more money, for example, on safety, or more money on public transport, or more money on climate action, then Aucklanders can choose an option to pay more and get more.
Can Aucklanders make proposals themselves for the reviewal of the 10-year budget?
Yeah, so the consultation will open at the end of February, beginning of March next year, and there will be plenty of opportunities for Aucklanders to give their feedback. So yes, they can definitely respond to what the Mayor has put out in terms of his proposal, and I would invite Aucklanders to tell us what they think and feel and what they want, what their aspirations are for the next 10 years for Auckland. So yes, Aucklanders can put forward their ideas. They can agree or disagree with what's in the Mayor's proposal, but then they can also, you know, give us the more fulsome answers as well. What do they think we should be doing? But I would also ask Aucklanders to balance that out, because if you want us to do more in a certain space, then you've also got to tell us how you would want us to pay for that. Are Aucklanders happy for rates to go up by 1%, for example, if they want us to do more with community facilities, or if they want us to upgrade certain parts of the council organisation? Or if they're not, then where do Aucklanders suggest we get the money to do those things? So yes, it's the opportunity for Aucklanders to have their say.
That was Councillor for Monaco, Lotu Fully, speaking to me about the Auckland Climate Grant and the review for the first proposal for Auckland Council's 10-year budget.
Have you tried mindfulness? Try mindfulness.
City Counselling on 95BFM.
Why do you think less students are choosing to study at university?
Well, because being a student isn't sexy anymore.
The Wire.
And we'll be right back after this quick break. Keep it on the B.
That big jolly guy, you know, red hat reindeer, appears once a year, gives gifts, then ghosts. Well, turns out he's burnt out, so can't do Auckland Christmas this year. No, it's got nothing to do with the striking elves. So he's given 95BFM all the gifts to give to one lucky B-card holder. That's right, it's the 95BFM Summer Sorted Super Prize Pack, featuring
return flights for two to Hawaii, thanks to Hawaiian Airlines.
A $2,000 voucher for Galbraith's Alehouse.
A 09 electric scooter from Freed, proud to be electric.
A $250 voucher for Meze Bar.
An invite to all Madman movie releases of 2024, plus a year's subscription to DocPlay.
A $500 voucher for Pat Menzies shoes.
A summer's worth of Reburger.
A summer's supply of reef oil for you and your mate.
A year's supply
tray of holy CBG hemp oil, thanks to Tiger Drops.
2 VIP passes to Laneway, tickets to Splore.
A double pass to Nest Fest.
A summer's worth of lion's mane and cordyceps mushroom capsules from Flow State.
Plus heaps more. The 95 BFM Summer Sorted Super Prize Pack. Text SUMMER plus your name and B-card number to 5395. More info on B-card signups at 95bfm.com.
Merry Christmas! What did Santa bring everybody?
Wow, some undies. Thanks, Santa.
Wow! A Leica M11 monochrome and a range of professional quality lenses. Santa, you're the best!
No, wait, why did you get a better gift?
I asked Santa for it. What did you ask for?
World peace?
Whoops.
Ding dong merrily on high. Find all the photography ding dongs you need to make your Yuletide gay at ProGear. Open now at 3 Railway Street, Newmarket, or go to progear.co.nz.
One regular shoestring fries, please.
Sure thing, buddy. How fast are you?
What?
Think you can beat Fast Willie? Here's your fries. Good luck.
Lord of the Fries is holding a fry-eating competition. And the winners will get a year's supply of fries. Get yourself a regular shoestring fries and record yourself speedily gobbling them. Then post and tag on TikTok and be in to win. Competition runs from December 7 to 24. For more info, go to lordofthefries.co.nz.
Time took upon itself to start testing things. And when it was Galbraith's turn to be tested, Galbraith stood up. And Time looked upon Galbraith's and said,
"Wow, that's exactly what you needed to do to get 100% on the test. Well done!
Galbraith's, the award-winning beer garden that stands the test of time. Complete with a delicious array of craft beers and top-notch food. Number 2 Mount Eden Road, open 7 days all holiday break except for Christmas Day.
Did you just get tickets for yourself?
Sorry.
You always do this.
I didn't think you wanted to come. I can get you a ticket.
I don't need your pity tickets. I'll just win one through 95BFM. By the way, what's your B-card number?
Always are heading to New Zealand for the first time ever. If you have a B-card, then you could win tickets to see them. Just stay tuned to 95BFM Drive for your chance to win. Always at the Power Station, December 16. Tickets from handsometours.com.
How big is his hole? And do...
That is not in the public interest, I can assure you.
The Wire.
You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. Let us know your thoughts on any of our pieces today. Text in on 5395.
Is it too late in the process, though, to change that?
Nothing's too late, bro. Everything's made up in politics.
The Wire.
The new government announced a repeal of Aotearoa's smoke-free legislation and regulation of tobacco products, making international news. I spoke to Professor of Social and Community Health at the University of Auckland, Peter Adams, about the influence of the tobacco industry on Aotearoa, New Zealand, and what needs to happen in order to create unbiased policymaking. Here is that interview. How can we describe the influence of the tobacco industry in Aotearoa on the new government?
Oh, goodness, that's a big one. What we study is the relationship between unhealthy commodity industries such as tobacco, alcohol, gambling and food industry, which are, you know, kind of the big ones in terms of health and well-being. They impact on so many different types of disease and mental health issues and people's well-being generally. And so we're interested in those and how the industry works to promote the consumption, particularly the heavy consumption of these products, because that's where they make most of their money. So the problem is that tobacco industry and alcohol industry get most of their money from people who are addicted, because those who are addicted spend heaps. So one person who's addicted can, you know, you've got a guaranteed reliable income from a person like that. So the industries will invest heavily in finding ways to prevent policies that might impact on the heavy consumption of their product. So that puts us in public health at loggerheads with the industry, because they want to increase the number of people who are drinking problematically, and we want to reduce that. So government's the piggy in the middle. But what the industry does, of course, is invest heavily in trying to influence industry. And there's a variety of tactics which we study, but probably the most important tactic is by forming friendships or forming friendly relationships with decision makers, which primarily are the people in cabinet. And these relationships are built over a long period of time and involve a whole range of things. They include the employment of lobbyists, and lobbyists work at facilitating these relationships between industry people and the government. And so that's what we've been looking at. It's hard to study because all of this happens behind closed doors. Some of it's obviously you can watch in terms of people attending meetings together, but that's really what happens outside meetings, the informal contact, regular contact over long periods of time, where the relationships are built and where the sense of obligation is built. Mm. So for me, it's kind of not surprising that this new government, the coalition, have done things that favour the tobacco industry, and they would have been working on this for quite some time. They would have been expecting to some extent that there will be a change in government. What our research and other places around the world who look into this is they find that industry will target people over a long period of time, maybe over decades, particularly if they see someone as a rising star, likely to be in cabinet influencing health policy. They'll be working to form relationships with those people and for them to feel some sense of obligation towards their interests. I guess we're looking at the general picture, and this is happening as part of a post. What's happened with the new government is sort of symptomatic of something that's going on all the time. Mm.
Has the tobacco industry's influence on Aotearoa informed the government's decision to repeal smoke-free legislation and the regulation of tobacco products, despite successful anti-smoking efforts over the past two decades?
Yes, it's quite extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, it does speak to how powerful these other processes are. Because we in public health have produced enormous amount of evidence to show what's effective in terms of reducing consumption of unhealthy product. And despite the evidence, governments continually push for the ineffective methods. So the ineffective methods, is again, which there's been a lot of research on, are the methods that focus on individuals. So the individuals aren't thinking properly, they aren't motivated, they're poorly informed. What governments do over and over is invest in education and awareness programs. The research evidence has been around for 50 years. It's still being produced. It says these are the least effective approaches to take.
What are the most effective approaches?
The most effective approaches are, well, really three main ones. Pricing, so increasing the price of a product. Availability, so restricting availability in ways that discourage heavy use or regular use. And thirdly is promotion, so it's advertising and social media, etc. So industries, because these are very effective, will invest heavily in trying to block those. And the sort of programs that focus on awareness, on drink driving campaigns, on all sorts, they have very little support because they just focus on the individual rather than the systems and the environment where things are happening. So it's interesting that the same old thing happening again is that Christopher Luxon was talking about education campaigns as an alternative to sorts of pricing and availability stuff, which has really made our tobacco policy so successful. I mean, we have been, it's an amazing success story, and that's been driven primarily by pricing and availability. And to some extent controls over promotion, the things that are effective, and we're living proof of how these approaches can be effective. And they're going back into the dark ages. They're looking at education and awareness programs as an alternative.
Mm.
It is disappointing but not surprising given the extent to which industry invests in forming relationships with policymakers. Of course, I don't know what happens behind closed doors, but we've been interviewing politicians and government people for the last 3 years, and they give us some insights into the customary, into the kinds of practices that go on in terms of relationship forming.
Mm. How do you think this policy will affect Aotearoa moving forwards?
Oh, it's predictable that the drop in smoking that we've witnessed, it's, you know, down to, I think it's like 8% now. We've witnessed a steady drop in the smoking rates over the last 20 years, since the Smoke-Free Environment Act, really, that's been a huge change. And, of course, if they don't look at the pricing and availability measures that they were looking at, particularly the denicotinisation of tobacco and the restrictions on the number of outlets, if we don't look at those, the consumption rates will not drop any further, I would say. There's a big risk that the rates of consumption will start to increase again because the government isn't willing to use the levers they can to work towards smoke-free Aotearoa.
What can be done? How can Aotearoa have this say about this policy?
Well, in terms of what we can do about this, there's several things. Firstly, the lobbying in New Zealand is not... We have very few controls over lobbying. Lobbyists can be employed to facilitate relationship building as they choose. And we have put very little in place. And in most countries, for instance, have a step-down period between a politician turning into a lobbyist and a lobbyist turning into a politician. That's a really important move. But I think in other things is having a register for lobbyists, having recording the involvement of lobbyists with politicians.
What would be the best way to regulate the influence and the involvement of powerful industries on policy making?
One of the things that really is important, the central thing, is having some form of point of accountability, such as an integrity commission, to monitor and to maintain the integrity of our political systems. Because I guess what we're talking about here is undue influence from one sector of society, which gives them a bigger say than the public in things that affect us. We really need to look at our systems and look at how we prevent industry interests overpowering public interests. Integrity Commission, a point within the government that monitors the extent to which corporate power has an overriding say in our policy. I think that's what's really important.
That was Professor of Social and Community Health at the University of Auckland, Peter Adams, speaking to me about the influence of the tobacco industry on Aotearoa.
Scientists have finally found the clitoris.
The Wire.
And we'll be right back. Keep it on the B.
Some more.
What's a seven-letter word for Street Fighter?
Brawler.
Hey, what's happening at Ponsonby Social Club this week?
DJs Luca and Kirsty Sutherland.
And tomorrow,
DJs Manuel Bundy and Martina Mack.
Same old Ponsonby Social Club, 152 Ponsonby Road.
Take the stress out of Christmas with Tiger Drops Holy CBG Hemp Oil. Plus, you get a free 15ml with every 30ml purchase. That's two Holy CBG Hemp Oils for the price of one.
Tiger Drops are not intended for consumption or for the treatment or prevention of any disease or condition. Sales support judicial review of CBD consumption in New Zealand. For more info, head to tigerdrops.com.
Nest Fest is back for 2024 with 5 stages and over 70 artists performing across 2 days. This is one summer festy you don't want to miss.
And we have a few tickets.
So if you're nice to us and you have a B-card, maybe we can chuck a few your way? Just listen to BFM Drive all week for your chance to enter. 95 BFM presents Nest Fest, January 5th or 6th at Tor Moana Showgrounds in the magical Hawke's Bay. Get your tickets now from nestfest.co.nz.
Arcade Radio, Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Classic bands, scalding hot takes, advice on how to cuff your pants. It could only be Auckland's leading skate brand affiliated radio show.
When I'm in a New York state of mind.
Arcade Radio.
Show me that you're mine, girl. Alright.
For all that and a heavy dose of fine tracks, tune in to Arcade Radio. Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m. with Mike, Jono, Eddie, Nat, and special guests every week. Arcade Radio. Only on 95 BFM.
Well, first of all, oh, I love it. I've clearly given up on trying to have any sort of neutrality in this interview.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're on 95 BFM. And next up, we have one more piece for you. Let us know your thoughts on our pieces today. Text us on 5395. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
It upsets me so much that there's still people that we need to convince this is a real fucking thing. Real friggin' thing.
The Wire.
Oxfam has published a report on New Zealand's fossil fuel industry, calling upon the government to immediately end the production of oil and gas. While New Zealand has made numerous commitments to reducing our climate impact, the new government has announced policies that promote further oil and gas production. I spoke to Oxfam's climate justice lead and the report's lead author, Nick Henry, about the report and how new government policies will affect our emissions targets. Is New Zealand's emissions progress currently in line with our climate targets?
No, it's not. We need to do more to reduce our emissions, and another way that we can contribute to the global effort to keep temperature increases below 1.5 degrees, so that's the goal of the Paris Agreement that we signed up to, is reducing our production of fossil fuels in New Zealand, because whether those are consumed here, or as most of them are, all of the oil, most of the coal is exported, that contributes to the world's emissions beyond what we produce here in Aotearoa. So we know that there's no room for new oil, gas or coal development within that 1.5 degrees limit. In fact, the oil and gas and coal that we're already digging up in those developed fields would take us beyond 1.5 degrees. So we actually have to have a plan to close those fields and mines early with a just transition to better alternatives that are going to provide good jobs and keep our communities both employed but also safe from the climate crisis.
Can those clean energy alternatives support New Zealand's current energy usage?
Yes, they can. It will take some work, and we should have started that work years ago, but the second best time is now. There has been a failure by New Zealand's energy, privately owned, but also with a public shareholding of those. There's been a failing of our energy companies to invest in renewable energy, and that's because our market has made it profitable for them to not invest in cheaper, cleaner renewable energy. So we urgently need, with a lot of leadership from government, to get our electricity grid off gas and also off coal, And the solutions to do that definitely exist in technology terms. We just need the right incentives and political leadership to make it happen. So that means building up renewable energy, including and especially at the local household and community level. So supporting community renewable schemes is a great way to increase our capacity as well. Managing our demand better so that we smooth out some of those peaks that are peaks of demand that are causing the big problems. And also the final piece, which is necessary to do what is needed, which is to end fossil fuel production in Aotearoa completely, would be to replace the gas-fired peak demand power stations with renewable alternatives, which would be energy storage, not just batteries, but various forms of energy storage, or even geothermal has the capacity to have that fast start. It all gets quite technical as well, but the solutions do exist, and what we really need is the urgency to do it and to minimise our use of gas in the transition rather than expanding it, because we know there's no room in the climate for expanded production of any fossil fuel.
On a slightly different note, in your report, you talk about New Zealand's climate issues as they relate to colonisation. How can we link ideas of decolonisation to climate activism?
Yeah, it's a really important question, and we were very pleased to work with Dr. Matt Scobie, who's a Ngāi Tahu academic and an expert on Indigenous economies, to look at the history of the fossil fuel industry in Aotearoa, how it was that we ended up with a fossil fuel production industry in this part of the Pacific. And the story really is one of colonisation from the early days of the coal industry, firing our agriculture, intensification with refrigerated meat exports and all of that, right up to the 70s with the expansion of oil and gas and the continual thread running through those of colonisation and dispossession of Māori as tangata whenua, including the confiscation of petroleum rights in 1937 that deprived Māori of the revenues from that resource, but more critically deprived Māori of the self-determination over whether to develop that resource, which would have been critical in recent decades as Māori have been the leaders of climate justice activism often in Aotearoa, having iwi, having their rightful say over whether we continue to develop fossil fuels. That would have been critical, and depriving Māori of that right of decision has been something that's allowed the fossil fuel industry to expand in Aotearoa, and that's going to be a critical fight to restore the right of self-determination of hapū Māori over their resources and economies and communities.
What degree of impact will the new government's policies have on future governments and our climate agreements?
It's a really important question, because the reason that we're focusing on fossil fuel production decisions is not because it's not also important to focus on consumption and find all the ways we can to reduce the use of fossil fuels, but alongside that, decisions on production are made in quite a kind of lumpy way. They're made sort of all at once in big chunks of investment. And once that investment is made and the permits are granted, it's not impossible, but it's pretty hard. It's much harder to roll that back. So when production decisions are made, those can lock in really substantial amounts of emissions that would take us far beyond the kind of the track that we need to be on to do New Zealand's fair share of phasing out fossil fuels globally. And so that's why it would be a dangerous step in the wrong direction for the new government to go ahead with overturning the ban on offshore oil and gas exploration and allowing that industry to expand, or encouraging or allowing the coal industry to expand, including on conservation land. Those are really worrying possibilities that the new government really needs to take a step back and get some advice and open up consultation and really look at whether that's a good idea, because it's when you look at the global climate, it's there's no way that it's consistent with keeping global warming below 1.5 degrees to be opening up any new fossil fuel development. And in fact, we need to be having a plan to close down existing production over time with the just transition. So really phasing out down to zero while building the alternatives. And so just the problem is that we have a new government who say that they're committed to those goals of the Paris Agreement, who actually signed up to the Paris Agreement in 2015, but are also making announcements that seem to contradict that commitment. So that's really a question for the new government. Will they stick with their commitments to do our bit to reduce global warming, to stand with the Pacific, to try and pull back from the brink of this crisis? Because right now we're hurtling towards a much, much worse climate crisis than what we're already experiencing.
And so when you were talking about those policies, you mentioned that these policies might make it in turn more difficult or exponentially more difficult for future governments to reach our climate targets.
Yes, that's right. And I think there are two aspects to that. One is that in terms of New Zealand's domestic climate targets, we do need to get to 100% renewable energy, not as an aspiration, but as a real mission and goal to achieve. By 2030 would be great if we can do that. And the real benefit for that would be that we would not be relying on gas production, and we could have a plan to fully transition to zero fossil fuel production. As we do that, we would need the government to take a much more active role in reducing gas production, because the current market would just keep expanding or maintaining production forever as long as it's needed for electricity, even though it's like 2% of the electricity grid is actually dependent on the parts of peak demand that we currently need gas for. It's making up a much bigger part of our domestic emission. The other part is that by phasing out fossil fuels rapidly by the early 2030s, in terms of production, New Zealand would be contributing our fair share to the global fossil fuel phase out that is absolutely needed to reduce the most severe aspects of the climate crisis. If we carry on as we are, we would blast through and pass that 1.5 degree limit, which are going to make conditions much worse for communities in the Pacific and around the world who are already, including in Aotearoa, who are already experiencing those effects of extreme weather.
That was Oxfam's climate justice lead and lead author of Oxfam's recent climate report, Nick Henry, speaking about the report and the new government.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, ne te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki o mō tēnei rā. That is a wrap on The Wire for Rāpare Thursday. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us, Auckland Councillor for Manukau Lotu Fully, Professor of Social and Community Health at the University of Auckland, Peter Adams, and Oxfam's Climate Justice Lead, Nick Henry. Ni rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou I whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.